IN Radio podcast with Dom Chambers.
IN Radio. Do you know, I think it's women like Tessa that really are the inspirational women that I hope, you know, the rest of us can follow the lead from. You know, not to follow the herd necessarily, to challenge people's expectation and norm, and not to let gender or diversity or the common perception get in the way of making a difference and bringing about change. And if there's any message that I think comes out of a wonderful and inspirational lady like Tessa, it's that.
The voice of Nikki Ness there from BFBS talking to me at the recent radio festival, which was a fantastic occasion, but one that was tinged with the sadness of the recent announcement that former Secretary of State Tessa Jowell had passed away. And Nikki's words there establishing the theme of what is, in fact, the all-new IN Radio podcast with Dom Chambers. I'm Dom, and in the programme, we are looking at the life of what many found a very inspiring person. And we have a few tributes here to listen to. But within that theme, I suppose it is two fantastic areas of contribution to public life that particularly concerns us. Naturally, she will principally be remembered for her personal drive and vision in achieving the 2012 Olympics for Great Britain, and as she will make very obvious herself in an interview she did with me back in that year, what was caught up in all that excitement was just as much about the Paralympics as the traditionally more famous games. And actually, that's what brings it back to my part of the world, because the city of Bath was where the Paralympics were organised for that year. And it was when Summer Valley FM was doing a special outside broadcast from the rugby ground in Bath as part of the Paralympic Flame Day celebrations that Tessa came in quite unexpectedly on the programme. And we'll have a clip of that in a while. If the success of the 2012 Olympics is perhaps the thing that Tessa is most remembered for, it was another aspect of her work as Culture Secretary that I want to dwell on today, because she oversaw the legislation that created licensed community radio here in the UK. And before that, there were the Access Pilots. And I have an interview with her appearing on one of those called Sound Radio. That was sent to me by Lol Geller, who was one of the original flag wavers for licensed community radio. And accordingly, he was involved in Access Radio and was also a member of the Community Media Association's Governing Council, where he remains to this day. And therefore, it's a short leap for me to get in touch with him as I sit on that council as well. And in talking to Lol, we not only understand why so many people have been moved to pay tributes to Tessa, but it also gives us a fantastic insight into the issues of those times that led to the 2003 legislation. That's all ahead of us. For now, though, it's back to the radio festival, where the day began by remembering Tessa Jowell. And that was led by Siobhan Kenny from the Radio Centre. And later on, I caught up with her.
Well, we've been talking about collaboration. I think I learnt at the feet of the utter mistress of that art. Tessa was a person, Tessa Jowell, who reached across political boundaries where rivalries can be just as fierce as they are in a commercial sector in order to get everyone facing in the same direction. Famously, she did it for the London Olympics. It's hard to remember now, isn't it, because the Olympics are so great. But actually, when I first worked with Tessa at the Department for Culture, Media and Sport, nobody wanted to even bid for the Olympics because that was a government that was scarred by what had then been the Dome Project to hail in the new millennium. They thought, we can't do big projects. So Tessa, with her amazing strength, tenacity, charm, picked off the cabinet one by one. She started with Tony Blair. He was the easiest one. And got everybody on board just to bid. And she carried on subsequently doing that once we became a candidate city, across business, across sporting world, across politics. And wow, what a great tribute to her that whole event was, actually.
And it was back in that amazing summer of 2012 that we take ourselves now. Just to set the scene, the city of Bath had laid on this incredible day, the Paralympic Flame Day, and Summer Valley FM was broadcasting live from the event. And in the lead up to it, through Bath and North East Somerset Council, we've been working with a number of groups of young people, including differently abled young people, and we brought the whole thing together for a live broadcast, and it was a tremendous carnival atmosphere with processions and lots of colourful costumes and generally everyone having a very good time, including the then MP for Bath, Don Foster, who was holding court, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, who was holding court next door to where we were broadcasting in the stand at Bath's rugby ground. And I'd asked Don if he'd like to come in and talk on the radio about the Paralympics. That Don said yes was no great surprise, because as always he was generous with the media. What I wasn't expecting though was for him to bring Tessa into the live broadcast. I always tell people in training that you must keep half an ear out for the unexpected and run with it if it happens. This was a great example of that. And here's how it all sounded on the day itself, which I think was in July 2012.
Don Foster's just come into the room and he's brought the previous Minister of the State, Tessa Jowell. Tessa, thanks very much for dropping by this afternoon.
It's a great pleasure. Lovely to be here.
And of course, you were the Minister in charge when all this process started, weren't you?
I was indeed. Now, 8 years ago, I was Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport. And I suppose it's true, yes, when I was Secretary of State, we kicked the whole thing off by deciding that we were going to back a bid for the Olympics and Paralympics in London 2012, and it's been a long journey since then,
but
a pretty extraordinary one, and I think that we're just all waiting with mounting excitement for Wednesday, the opening ceremony for the Paralympics and getting the Paralympics underway.
Absolutely, and indeed looking forward to that. We'll talk about that in a second. Let's just go back to those days, because not everybody was absolutely convinced that we should put a bid in, weren't they? Mad to think about it now, though.
I think you could probably count on the fingers of one hand the people who thought it was a good idea to bid. And my civil servants advised against bidding. The cabinet was, at that point, against bidding. And the reason being that an Olympics and a Paralympics involves many risks over a long period of time. First of all, the risk that you're going to bid and not get it. Second, the risk that the budget will be bust and costs will rise. The third is that the media and the public will turn against it, and so you have weeks and weeks of bad headlines. And then the fourth risk, that you spend all this money and then Team GB doesn't actually do that well. So I think on every measure, we've kind of jumped over all those risks.
It's been a big issue, yeah.
Especially, you know, the performance of Team GB in the Olympics, third in the medal table, far exceeding, I think, anybody's, even their expectations. And now we're bated breath for the Paralympics to see if we can hit second.
Yeah. Well, as you say, let us hope for that. I've been talking with Don before, just been talking with Paul Crossley as well about legacy. From your point of view, having overseen the start of this whole process, what are
start,
your...
Start, middle, and the general election.
And the beginning sort of the end.
We got picked at the end by the general election.
Yeah, well,
and not losing the general election. But for 8 years, I was the Secretary of State who was responsible for the Olympics. And throughout that time, worked very, very closely with both Don and with Hugh Robertson. And so there's been a remarkable degree of stability from the three of us who've worked together seamlessly and been absolutely determined that no party political difference would ever get in the way of doing what was right for the Olympics and Paralympics.
Undoubtedly, the world came round to your way of thinking in supporting this bid in the first place. What are your hopes for the legacy? What do you think will be the results of London 2012 and the Paralympics?
Well, I think that there are perhaps three areas. One is the physical regeneration of that particular part of East London, but also the upgrading of sports facilities that have been used as training camps all around the country. And obviously, the training facility in Bath, where the Paralympic team are training, is one of the elite centres of the UK and is producing world-class athletes across all disciplines all the time. So, Bath has made made a very important contribution here. So the first is that regeneration. The second is, let's hope this encourages more children to play sport. And I think there's still a bit of argument, discussion to see that through to a satisfactory conclusion. But what I have said for my party is that we would like, just as the Olympic and Paralympics have been cross-party, we would like to engage in the development of a sports policy which is also cross-party and can be guaranteed to deliver over the next 10 years. There should be no ideology or party political difference in this. Just how do you create the conditions for disabled kids, able-bodied kids to do their very best and love their sport? The third, of course, the third important bit of the legacy is what we all remember from this extraordinary time. And in a way, we've run out of superlatives, haven't we, about the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I think we're just about to get a new set of superlatives written for the Paralympics, because I'll tell you, no country has sold more tickets than we have for our Paralympics. Just to illustrate that, Athens, which had the Games in 2004, sold 1,000 tickets for the Paralympics. Beijing sold 5,000 tickets for the Paralympics. We're on nearly 2 million tickets for the Paralympics. So the venues will be full. There'll be an amazing home crowd to pull our athletes home, just as they did for probably 4 out of our ultimate tally of medals. So I think that the third bit of legacy that is what money can't buy, in a sense, is how we feel about our country, the pride we feel, in our Olympians and Paralympians. And I hope also that what we're about to see over the next 2 weeks will mark a further change in attitudes to disability, because I'll tell you, you haven't seen athleticism until you've been to a Paralympics.
Absolutely. Just as you were saying, that's an extraordinary statistic you came up there about the interest in Paralympics in Athens and going forward to this 2 million. That's absolutely staggering.
And it's nearly 2 million, I think.
Yeah, well, on its way.
Don Foster here, and I can tell you Tessa got it wrong. It's now well over 2 million and heading towards 2.5 million, and that will be, if all of those go, a complete sellout.
All right, excellent.
First time ever.
Yeah, no, that is so impressive and a testament to the success and raising awareness. We've got a big smile from Steve, who's still in the studio when that figure was mentioned. Are you here in official capacity today?
No, I'm here visiting my mum today, and then my very good
that's very
friend,
official.
My very good friend Don Foster said, as one deputy mayor to another, because I was a deputy mayor of the Olympic Village. Okay. Don is a deputy mayor of the Paralympic Village. Would you like to come to this? So I was absolutely delighted. A very kind invitation was extended to my mum, but she doesn't get out that much, and so I've had a very nice time with her, and now I'm here, which is a great pleasure.
And it's been a bonus this afternoon for us to talk to you. Many thanks for joining us on Summer Valley Outside Broadcast. So, Tessa Gerald, thank you. In
radio. Tessa Gerald joining us at Summer Valley FM for a wonderful day of celebration just ahead of the launch of the Paralympics in 2012. What we didn't get from that clip is that away from the microphone, she spent time with and wanted to talk with all the young people who were involved in that project. And we all got the impression she did that because that's who she was, and remembering that she was there in Bath on a private visit that particular day, so she didn't have to do any of that, really. But now I want to take the focus away from the Olympics and think about the Communications Act of 2003. This was a very wide-reaching piece of legislation, and too much for us to go into now, although it is worth noting that it was in 2003 that Ofcom formally came about. Also, just a note in passing, it made sending malicious comment on social media a criminal offence, and we've heard rather more about that in recent times. But really what concerns us here is the legislation that created community radio. And this didn't just come from nowhere. Tessa was the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, and there was all sorts of activity that had been going on for several years leading up to this legislation. And the Community Media Association was very much involved in that, as you would expect from an organisation that had been lobbying for this to take place for a very long time. Very much part of those times, and with many memories of Tessa Jowell, I'm joined now by Lowell Geller. In radio.
So I would have to say that Tessa Jowell was an absolutely crucial figure in the creation of community radio as we know it today. She was obviously the Secretary of State with responsibility at the time of the Communications Bill in 2003, and took an active interest, I think, possibly from her social worker background. She kind of got the whole thing about community radio in a way that I think probably a lot of the other politicians that we were canvassing and trying to get support from possibly didn't. So she was the ideal person to be in a position to kind of get what community... Well, as it was then, of course, it was called Access Radio. And what you'll probably find in the lovely bit of audio when she came to visit Sound Radio in 2003 was that she was kind of persuaded almost at the time, I think, that community rather than access was what it was about. And she kind of got a lot of the stuff around training, empowering people, giving people voices that didn't have voices, and really a sector with its own discrete identity rather than, say, the BBC and the commercial sector. So she was very sympathetic, but also had to be pragmatic. She was the Secretary of State, and there was lots of lobbying from people like the BBC and the commercial sector who were kind of deeply suspicious about having their toes trodden on by these peripheral figures in the community sector. So I think she was absolutely crucial to us even having a fighting chance of having the sector that we know today.
We very much have three areas of licensed radio in this country, licensed local radio anyway. You've got your BBC, you've got your commercial networks, and now in the last 10 years we have community radio, and there's a number of things that earmark that as a very separate sector to the other ones. And we know that it must be charitable, it must be a non-for-profit, only one business can own one license, and there must be a number of wider social gain objectives. And how much do you think, Lowell, that the character of a community radio license in the UK is to do with the outlook of Tessa?
I think it has a tremendous amount to do with Tessa's outlook about the benefits of what was obviously clearly a very fledgling idea at the time, 15 access stations around the country, Anthony Everett's report doing the analysis of what the benefits were, and of course what I would describe as really not sympathetic opposition from the existing kind of ecosystem of the BBC and the commercial sector, which, you know, to an extent I kind of understand. They weren't quite sure about it. So I think Tessa really understood that there had to be a distinct differentiation between the sectors to really deal with some of that quite tough lobbying and resistance from the other sectors. So not only was she an idealist, I think, but she was very much a pragmatist. And I think part of, I suppose, the abiding legacy of Tessa Jowell is she was a politician that I think we would like to see more of. You know, she did the best she could in a very practical way in terms of framing the legislation to have a distinct character or a distinct definition of a sector that kind of precluded some of the opposition, but also gave an identity to, you know, something which was meant to be different, something which was meant to serve different interests. So I think she was very important in framing it in a way that was acceptable to as many people as possible. So I'd say she was very, very influential in defining this third sector of broadcast.
We've had a lot of tributes, and we're hearing a lot of tributes in this podcast. People are attesting to her, to how personable she was, as well as her professionalism. How did you and other people at the Community Media Association at the time find working with her in those days?
Oh, well, I've got to say, we did not cross paths. We did bump into each other an awful lot. I was kind of involved in doing lots of lobbying at the time, some with a CMA hat on and some with an Access Radio hat, and some generally as a person who wanted to see the legislation happen. So we would often meet up at a kind of event. Fortunately, she also, I think the only station she actually came to visit with quite an entourage from what was going to become Ofcom, because of course this was kind of a fledgling outfit and a coalition of previous things like the Radio Authority and the rest of it. So very personable, very good with the people that were at Sound Radio, a very diverse community. And you could see she was, to quote that rather hackneyed expression, she was a people's person. She clearly had an interest in the reality of people's lives. I don't know if that's from a social worker background, but you know, but just basically as a human being, she seemed to be genuinely interested in people's lives. So it comes as no great surprise to me that there are many people queuing up to give glowing eulogies about what she was as a person, never mind as a kind of responsible minister at the time.
Well, you've mentioned that she appeared on Sound Radio, and perhaps you could introduce that. You actually introduced the original, but perhaps in the light of these reflections, perhaps you could introduce the piece again.
Tessa came with, I think, Tony Stoll and a few other people, you know, figures at the time. Anyway, Tessa came to the station and was met with a whole range of people that were keen to bend her ear about the virtues of Access Radio. And I had the good fortune to introduce her at the time. And she was very keen to take part in an interview with one of our interviewers. It was very nervous, Tony Adu, but quite charming. But she was very patient, very supportive of the fact that he was probably a bit nervous, and trying to kind of interview this Secretary of State. And as I reminded him, she was very much the boss in the situation, so be nice to her. But actually, if anything, I think she was probably really rather nice to him, and I think that is a glowing testimony to the person, really.
Sound Radio, broadcasting on 1503 AM. Nice.
Hello, I'd like to break into the normal slot here, DG Brown. Oh, no, he's not actually, it's Cam. Cam's given up a bit of his time, but he was very happy before because he actually managed to get a lifelong ambition fulfilled by Tessa Jowell, which was he got to introduce Respect by Aretha Franklin. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to bring in one of our star presenters, Tony Adjoup, to ask Tessa a few questions. Hopefully, I've warned you, don't antagonise her because she's the big boss, Tony. But no, but no pressure now. Okay, so with no further ado, Tony Adjoup and Tessa Jowell.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Right Honourable Tessa Jowell.
Good afternoon, Tony.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well here, thank you.
Great, excellent. I'd really like to ask you, actually, why do you call the radio, like Sound Radio, Access Radio instead of Community Radio?
Well, I think that's a very good question, and I mean, there's nothing fixed about that. But Access Radio is supposed to communicate what it is, a way of access to broadcasting, to communities, to individuals, to people who wouldn't normally think of themselves as being broadcasters. But if once we've done all the evaluation and looked at the work of the 15 pilots, the general view is that community radio is a better description. I'm certainly open to change it.
So you think that you would prefer community radio instead of Access? Because for my listeners or for the guests that I invite for my shows, if I say, for example, it's an Access radio, they won't think about it. If I say community radio, they just already think what it is.
I think you've made a very good point there, Tony. And as I say, I mean, I'm happy to take that away and, you know, let's see what we can do.
All right. Another question about the communication bills, actually. How do you think you could help us for the timetable for the Access Radio?
Well, the Communications Bill completed its stages through the House of Commons yesterday, and it now goes to the House of Lords. It has some very important things to say about radio, about local radio, protecting localness, about lifting some of the rules about who can own what in order to increase the amount of money that can go into radio to improve program quality and program range. And there's also a power in the Communications Bill for local licenses to be issued for Access or community radio. But we want to wait and see what the result of the evaluation of the first 15 pilots is, what we can learn from that, and then move on to the next stage. But we've got provision to do that in the Communications Bill.
What will be your first priority among all these?
in communications, in broadcasting.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, well, it's enormously wide. I think the most important thing is that we have legislation that gives people, in an increasingly competitive digital age, gives people the kind of broadcasting on radio and television that they want, that enhances and improves the enjoyment of their entertainment, improves the choice of programmes available to them. So that's the priority. I mean, the priority is giving people what they want, high-quality radio and television.
All right. So how do you think we can support you in your... I don't know how to say it. What do you say?
Yeah, in my ambition.
In your ambition, yes. It's the right word, in your ambitions.
Ambition will do. Well, I think by doing what you're doing. And I've had a wonderful afternoon here talking to some of your many hundred volunteers who in some way or another are linked up with Sound Radio. This is a chance to talk to your listeners. I'm sure there are many of them across East London. So, I mean, what you can do to help is to go on being the success that you evidently are and to go on making the case for community radio.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I can't resist to ask you. I just heard that you're a huge fan of Mrs. Dynamite, aren't you?
I am a great fan of Miss Dynamite, yes.
So I think that you were happy that she won two awards in the Brits last week.
Oh, I think she's absolutely fantastic. And I've got her latest CD at home. And I play it a lot. I think she is absolutely terrific.
And what about your other idols, music idols?
Well, I was just saying earlier that if I was going to take one CD to a desert island, it would probably be my Motown Songs of the 60s.
Oh.
But I'm a great Beatles fan. I'm an Elvis fan. Elton John, Simon and Garfunkel. Nora Jones is a hot favourite at the moment.
So you were happy again because she won
Robbie Williams.
Grammys.
You know, so I'm pretty eclectic. But I've got my children are, well, they're not so much children anymore, are 21 and 19. So they keep me up to scratch on what I ought to be listening to.
All right. We have as well. We have a program for children in our radio. So, as a mother, what would you expect in the community's radio for the program for children?
Oh, I think that's fantastic if you've got a slot for children.
Mm-hmm. We do have one, yeah.
Well, I think one of the very good ideas would be to get some kids in here and ask them what sort of programs they'd like to be able to listen to. Maybe get them involved. Maybe have a children's program which is actually done by a small group of kids. I mean, I think that lots of kids find that sort of outlet for their creativity, you know, incredibly engaging and challenging. Recently, I mean, I recently gave approval to new digital television channels for children on the BBC. And why did we do it? Well, because what they were offering was, you know, extremely high quality, you know, just good programming for children, very diverse. And, I mean, I get shot if I say things like not cartoons all the time, but you know what I mean, because I'm a mother.
I know what you mean. So what would tell us a bit, just a bit more?
Well, I think that what children want is good drama, stories. They want their imagination engaged. They want good music to listen to. But I think that the best way of getting the tone right and the balance right is to make sure that you involve kids in the schedule that you develop and don't just do it through an adult perspective.
So, yes, if I understood, have them in the studio. Just last questions. The last word, what you would like to add about, I don't know, this afternoon and about your ambition?
Well, there are lots of ways in which people like me, you know, in our government, talk about the importance and the power of community. But I think it would be very hard to find a more powerful expression of community, people working together, cooperating for the benefit of a much larger number of people than what I've seen here this afternoon at Sound Radio. So congratulations to all of you. I think you're doing a fantastic job. And I hope your listeners go on supporting you as they should.
Tessa Jewell, thank you very much. It was a great pleasure to have you here in the studio.
Now, in that piece, I see what you're saying now. I think Tessa really helped out a nervous presenter. It actually comes over as a very charming piece of radio, but one that was at the absolute hub of the development of the licensed community radio sector, as we've been discussing. That little debate was clearly a big debate at the time about whether to call it access or community radio. That debate has moved on. Where did you stand on it then?
I thought it was quite important. Access, I think, in the context of time, was kind of overly marginalising in terms of, it was almost like, you know, what you would associate with public service access in the States, say. So it's kind of quite a marginal entity, marginalised activity, rather than it being more inclusive, more about communities, more about people, rather than, say, maybe like some little oddball gets a chance to say something on a radio that no one's listening to. It was actually about much more. I think she encapsulates that in her responses in the interview, which, you know, it is about human rights stuff. It is about opportunities for people that wouldn't get opportunities. And it's kind of an opportunity, I would say, to not have to do radio necessarily in the way that people think radio should be done. There was an opportunity to do things vastly differently. Not everyone wants to do that. We kind of know it's a broad church. I think she understood it was a broad church. But she also kind of got the fact that the use of access probably was too marginalising. A community was a bit more involving and a bit more incorporating.
And all these years later, there is still a debate, not about access and community, but about community and something else. And there's many of the radio stations in our sector have been dropping the community moniker, if you like.
Yeah.
What is your feeling about that now?
Well, I think, you know, we often say our strength is our weakness and our weakness is our strength. We are a tremendously broad church. There's the BBC and then there's the commercial sector. One's charged by a licence fee to carry out its duties, and the commercial sector, which has a more overtly profit-driven ethic. And there's the community sector. Well, the community sector kind of incorporates people that maybe, say, very, you know, radio enthusiasts that never got the opportunity to take part in, say, the BBC or the commercial sector, but had a great love and a great involvement in radio, you know, in very many ways, and relate to radio in that, shall we say, more conventional way. And they are the new local radio in many ways. They replace the kind of deficient elements of the BBC and the commercial sector serving local interests. So what you have is you have radio enthusiasts that are providing a local service that's driven by local people within a local agenda. There are other people, probably people like myself, who come from a slightly fluffier, you know, almost like the beauty contestant who says, I want to make the world a better place, is more about access, you know, to voices and opportunities for training and more kind of debate about the injustices or the justices of local politics or even global politics. So I think we need to be mindful of the fact that we need to embody both and not be too tough on each other in terms of our idea of what radio or community radio actually is. It is all these things, and that's the beauty of it. But sometimes that becomes, you know, if we're not careful, that becomes an obstacle for us promoting the virtues of it as a sector. We all have different ideas about really, you know, what it's there for. But the good news is there's enough variety within it to hopefully at least deal with that breadth of ambition and aspiration for people that are not directly involved in the BBC or commercial thing. It may also be a pathway for people to get employment in a more conventional media setup. That's part of it as well. You know, it covers very many things. That's its absolute virtue.
Well, perhaps one of the legacies that anyone in public life can hope for is that their work is still triggering debate and thoughts long after their time.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Lowell, for joining me on this tribute to Tessa Jowell.
My pleasure entirely.
And many thanks to Lowell there, not only for his fitting tribute, but also for setting us in the context of what must have been very exciting times as they developed the concept of licensed community radio, for which I suppose, not least my career, we are all very grateful. And as this first edition of the In Radio podcast comes towards its end, do get in touch with me with ideas and suggestions for future themes of the programmes. And I never knowingly turn down an invitation to visit a radio station. You can tweet us at In Radio Podcast, or you can tweet me at the Dom Chambers. But the last word, I think, should go to Jeremy Vine, who fittingly comes up with a lovely story to end our reflections. Jeremy spoke at the recent radio festival, and slightly unexpectedly, I saw him for a moment on his own, and I didn't lose an opportunity. Jeremy, of course, always very happy to speak on microphone, and this is what he had to say.
I am very personally sad. I haven't made a big deal of this on the air because it wouldn't be appropriate, but when I was a correspondent in the 90s in Westminster, I was very, very junior. I was a big BBC team down there, and, you know, some MPs would not give you the time of day. I could talk to an MP 12 times. He would still not know who I was, my name. She was very personable. She always had the time. Came out to lunch with me once. I mean, she was a cabinet minister at one point. She's having lunch with this junior correspondent. So she was extremely nice. And I mean, that's a terrible thing to say, nice, but she was very humane and human. And I think that's the opposite of what we imagine politicians to be. So I think she sets a great example. And I say that completely genuinely. I think she showed politicians what to be.
The In Radio podcast. In Radio.